All right, Leroy. John 4, 43. Okay. Last week we ended up with a Samaritan woman and the well, and Jesus, after talking with her, went to their town, spent two whole days in that town, and they came to the conclusion after spending 2 days with the Master. What conclusion did they come to? Do you remember?
He is the
Savior of the world. And here the Christian people, the Jews, the most chosen people, were rejecting Him. And here some lowly Samaritans recognize who He is. Okay, now, John 4, 43.
Well, after the 2 days, He left for Galilee. Now, Jesus Himself had pointed out that a prophet has no honor in his own country.
All right, let's stop there. Here she is. Remember, John the Baptist, disciples were beginning jealous of Jesus' disciples because they were baptizing and more of John's disciples were coming over to Jesus. And so Jesus leaves and He wants to go to Galilee. He had two ways of going. And He chose to go through Samaria, and we know why now, simply because of the woman. Now He spent 2 days, now He's going to Galilee, and along the way is His hometown of Nazareth. And He bypassed Nazareth, and He goes to Canaan. And He says to the disciples as He's walking, a prophet is never honored in his own country. Why would He say that?
Disciples for the recognition that they might be rejected too by their...
Okay. Is that a true statement? Other than Jesus said it, that we would take that as valid, but is that a true statement?
Yeah, it fits the one where we say when familiarity breeds contempt. When you get too close to people, you learn more about them and then you have nothing to do.
Yeah.
But here he was from a little town. Everybody knew him. Well, first off, he's a carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
The lowest profession they can have.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody else have some comments? You know, one of the things I worry about all the time is Roger used to work for me. I just don't know that one time I dropped that copier on my finger and said a bad word that he might remember it. See, so you know, you just kind of worry about that. And what happens when somebody does good, but you know them when they're growing up, or we find people from school and, well, how are you doing? Did you think you're going to sneak in here tonight? Let's give Sandra a round of applause. Would you like to tell us a little bit about where you've been for 8 weeks? No? Okay, we'll continue then. So, what happens when you see these people being successful or being, you know, whatever? What goes through your mind?
Sometimes we have the attitude when somebody that we know and they're just the plain Jane, then they make it big. Oh, well, I knew her when she was little, or, you know, you're real proud. But then sometimes it can be the opposite, and I'm not really sure why necessarily. But, well, I know all about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, later on in life when they're very successful, I know all about them. So Jesus knew what the attitude was going to be, apparently, in His hometown. And I guess that day He chose to just walk around it and not even go.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. It's easy to... You know, you go to school with some of these people and you think, well, boy, I remember this and this and this. If we have the right attitude or if we're thinking the right things, I think the real answer is, boy, I can remember what they were like. Praise God and what He's done in their life and what He's like now. But sometimes that doesn't work. Let's see. Did this happen last week? Okay. That might be my granddaughter.
usually the first thought that comes to your mind for somebody that's been successful, you think, it's not what he knows, but who does he know to get in this successful place?
Yeah. No, it's very easy not to give credit to people. And so Jesus, remember the disciples, this was young in their ministry. And I think Roger touched on some things. So they just cleansed the temple and kind of left there. John the Baptist disciples are mad at them. They're in Samaria and they wasn't happy to be there. Even though Jesus was converting a town, they weren't happy. And so maybe, you know, I'm a firm believer that everybody needs victory and victories in life. So maybe Jesus decided to bypass Nazareth and that was his explanation. Read on.
Well, when he arrived in Galilee, the Galileans welcomed him. They had seen all that he had done in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, and they also had been there.
Okay, so we have the Galileans who are in north, who had come down to Jerusalem for the Passover. And what impressed them there at the Passover? I mean, how would they be? Were they impressed that he drove the money changers and some of the rulers out of the temple? And if they were impressed, why would they be impressed with that?
Well, I think they felt victimized by all that system too. So I think that was their kind of, you know, hero, not in a way, in the sense of speaking out about their outrage, because they had to travel, so they didn't bring all the things that they had to exchange, buy all this stuff for inflated prices and stuff.
Absolutely. There's two reasons. One is exactly that. They knew they were being taken advantage of. They were being swindled. Their money was being stolen. And also, what's easily to forget, that when Jesus drove out the money changers, what did he do after that?
Sat down and taught the children.
Set out that, and what else? He healed quite a few of the people. See? So we sometimes tend to forget that right after he drove out the money changers, and they're running from him, he stayed and talked, healed the people, and when the Pharisees came back, they were madder than ever before, because there was a group of people around him. So these Galileans must have remembered both of them things. And so they're happy to see Jesus. Also, he's at Cana. Everything okay? He's at Cana, and where he had just done what previously?
The wine.
He turned the wine in, the water into wine. So good reception here. Okay.
Once more, he visited Cana in Galilee, where he had turned the water to wine. And there was a certain royal official whose son lay sick at Capernaum. When this man heard that Jesus had arrived in Galilee from Judea, he went to him and he begged him to come and heal his son, who was close to death.
Okay. Now, Capernaum is about 18 miles away from where Jesus is in Galilee. Now, remember, that's a long ways when you walk. And he had heard about Jesus. We think that he was most likely higher up in King Herod's court. Seems to be enough from the Jewish side of history that he was higher up in the court. And he hears about Jesus. And he knows his son is dying, so he takes that trek of 18 miles, and he finds Jesus. Now, he had not seen Jesus. He had heard about Jesus. But he had heard how that he had healed people in Jerusalem there at the Passover. And no matter what your position in life, whether you're the king of the world or you're a ditch digger, when someone in your family is sick, you need help. We're all in the same boat. So he goes to Jesus. How many of you think Sue and I are going to have a little talk tonight afterwards? Is anybody? Just kidding. Where was I? Okay.
Yeah, well,
fine. Don't move again, please. Well, we get to edit this tape a lot tonight.
You're all
18, same boat, comes to Jesus. Okay, he comes to Jesus and it says that he begs. He does what? For his son's life. What does he say? Or has we got to that yet?
Yeah, we ain't got there.
Okay, we ain't got there.
He just begged him to come and heal his son.
Yes. Yeah, begging, I want that. In the Greek, this is a continual pleading. He's pleading. It's not like, please come. He is pleading. I know what I was going to say now. He had heard about Jesus. What do you think went through his mind when he realized his son's life was going to be in the hands of Jesus and he saw Jesus? What do you think went through his mind?
Well, I can't imagine that he hadn't already had all the doctors around taking care of his son. I would suspect. And he gets down to the point that there's no elsewhere to turn. And I think he really had to swallow his royal pride to come and talk to this carpenter man because he had heard of these miracles. And he had to come and talk, see that carpenter man, see if that carpenter man could heal his son.
Okay.
It says that he decided in his mind that if he came and healed his son, he'd believe in him.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't. Well, then,
Yeah, we're going to come to that in just a second. That's exactly right. We're told that he was extremely disappointed when he saw Jesus. Because he had conjured in his mind a person who heals, person that has a lot of things on the ball, somebody that's going to cure his son. And when he went, there was a crowd around Jesus, and when he finally worked his way through the crowd and saw Jesus, that he was extremely disappointed in him. Why?
He's dressed like the rest of the people.
Dressed like a...
He looked like
Noah.
He
just like a common person.
Special.
Didn't look special.
Yeah.
Didn't act special. You know, and we're told that he was just disappointed. It's very important to understand this because there's going to become a sentence in just a second. Okay.
Unless you people see miracles...
Read the sentence before to bring this in. Yeah.
When the man heard that Jesus had arrived in Galilee from Judea, he went to him and begged him to come and heal his son who was close to death.
Okay.
Unless you people see miraculous signs and wonders, Jesus told him, you will never believe.
Okay, let's stop there. Now, different versions of that, unless you people. What do you have?
Unless you people see signs.
Okay, what do you have?
48.
Okay, anybody else?
Yeah.
What do you have over in the paraphrase world?
Okay. Jesus said to the nobleman, you're asking me to come to your house to heal your son? And you've decided that if I do, then you'll believe. And if I'm I'm the son of God.
Okay, well, there's the paraphrase. All right, what does yours have, Sandy?
It's the same.
A people, okay. Does anybody have people italicized?
Yeah, it's...
Okay. What does italicized mean?
Added.
It's added.
I think the King James just says, unless you. It didn't
yes.
say people.
Yes. Now, this, a lot of, I probably looked at this verse from 30 different commentators, or what's the word?
Translations.
No, what? Commentaries. So if you write a commentary, what are you? A what? commentator. Sounded logical to me. That's good. I'm glad we don't have any English teachers in here. So, and most of them like to think that Jesus was saying this for everybody around him. But we're told in different one, the one I particularly care for, that this was directly to him. And then I went back and make sure, looked in the Greek, and looked in the deal, and the word people is not there. That's supplied. So that's what they think he said. Here was a man, when he came to Jesus, had all the high hopes, and when he saw him, he was totally disappointed. It wasn't what he thought. And then he said, "Well, come with me and heal my son." He's begging and pleading, still had a spark of hope. And Jesus looked at him and said, "Unless I do something mighty, you will not believe," because guess what the guy had in his mind? The nobleman. What do you think his thinking was? If you don't heal him, you're not the Messiah. If you do heal him, I'll believe in you. Now, one of the reasons that we're doing the chronological stories of Christ, it's important to understand that this, we'll pick up this, but this happened exactly 2 days, as John states. What signs and miracles did the Samaritans demand from Jesus?
None.
Absolutely none. What miracles did he do?
None.
Absolutely none. Why did they believe on him?
Because someone came and told them, and they went to see for themselves.
They went to see for themselves, and what did they see?
They discovered.
They saw God.
Yeah.
And they said the most precious thing a person can say, "Why don't you come over to us, stay with us, and visit as long as you want to?" They asked for nothing and received everything. 2 days later, he's in amongst people, and here comes a nobleman who in his own mind had said, if this is the guy who they claim he is, if he'll heal my son, I'll believe. What he was basically saying is, I have nothing to lose. So he had conjured up in his mind exactly what he thought this great healer must look like. A white suit, which must have been fashionable in those days. Nice flashy tie. See? And he sees the carpenters and his faith falls. But he still has enough to say, if you'll just come with me, if you'll come and touch my son, he might live. That's the faith he had, he might live. By the way, after Jesus' 3 years of ministry, who else said to Jesus, "Well, if you'd have just been over here and touched him, he wouldn't have been dead"?
Lazarus.
Mary and Martha said that exactly right. This is 3 years later. Boy, these were slow learners. You see? So Jesus looked within the heart of that nobleman. And then he said, "Well, unless you see wondrous things and miracles, you won't believe." What do you think went through the nobleman's mind?
"I'm in trouble now."
Pardon?
"I'm in trouble now. He may not come."
One sense? What else?
"Well, it's sort of like the woman at the well. You could read my mind. You knew what was I was thinking."
That's right.
"I don't know. Had it been me, I probably thought about that time, I'm not concerned with this belief stuff. Just come and heal my child."
Mm-hmm. See?
That was the first thing in his mind.
He was approaching Jesus for pure selfishness. What's in it for me? Now, it just happened to be a very nice cause. See? What's in it for me? If you're really who you say you are, and you do this for me, then I'll believe you. If you don't do this, then you're a fake. Jesus owed it to that man, as he does with us in lots of circumstances, to get to the core of the problem. And he looked within his heart and he says, I know exactly what you're thinking. Unless I do something miraculous, you're not going to believe. And it touched his heart. It's why that word Greek, pleading, is a continuous action. Then he touched his heart and he said the same thing with inside as the woman at the well said. Man, he knows my thoughts. He's telling me what I'm doing. And so all of a sudden the relationship changes.
Now Jesus does a super miraculous. You may go. Your son will live. The man took Jesus at his word.
Absolutely. Would he have, before this experience, taken Jesus at his word? Probably not. He came to Jesus with a preconceived idea. He came to Jesus, I have nothing to lose. He came to Jesus with a proposition. Lord, if you'll help me buy these 40 acres, then I'll believe in who you are. Lord, if you'll just figure out how I can buy a house, then I'll believe who you are. Lord, if you can just get me out of this mess, then I'll believe.
And you know what, though? Even that's enough.
Sometimes that happens, see?
When I say enough, it's amazing when you think about how Jesus will take a person seeking Him in a, to me it looks like a pretty psychologically screwed up way,
mm-hmm.
but that's enough
mm-hmm.
if the person is open to go further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had enough faith,
yeah.
Misplaced,
yeah.
Misunderstood, but he had enough faith to walk 18 miles and say, if you'll just come and touch my son, he'll live. But it was for, I have nothing to lose, had nothing to do with his relationship. And then he throws in, and I'll believe. See? We do this in deal all the time. We want the person to give first, and then we'll accept. You know, I do hiring. Well, what kind of signing bonus will you give me? I'm not going to give you anything. Well, why not? I've got 5 years' experience. Hey, man, that's fantastic. The only thing I don't know is, can you sell a Hawk security system? Now, if you'll do this, I'll double bonuses on your performance, where your bonus is $2,000. If you hit this number, I'll pay you $4,000. But I don't pay you anything up front. I don't know if you can sell a Hawk system. See, that's the way we're built. And that's the way sometimes we bargain with God. Well, boy, if you'll just do this, this, and this, then I'll react. Well, God would be doing us a disfavor. Because generally what happens when He does this, this, and this?
We add to it.
We say, got out of that one, Lord, thank you. And then you just go, there's nothing learned.
Children of Israel.
Yeah, there's nothing learned. So Jesus looks inside this, and then He says, what did He say?
The man?
Yep. No, Jesus.
Jesus says, you may go. Your son will live.
Okay. And he goes. Now, how do we know that he was a different man when he left than when he arrived?
He looked at his Mickey Mouse wristwatch.
Okay, not there yet. How else do we know?
He left.
He left. What else? Spent the night somewhere. Spent the night somewhere.
He left.
Yeah, he spent the night somewhere.
Yeah, didn't hurry home.
See? Now, if you get a phone call that, you know, your loved one or whoever it is, parent, child, uncle, aunt, whatever, is dying, what do you do?
Hurry there.
You get there as quick as you can. Spent the night somewhere. Because we're going to find out in just a few verses. Or I made it up. One of the two. See? Didn't hurry home. What was the reason for him hurrying home?
He believed.
If Jesus would have just said, go, your son lives, he would have had a decision to make, but Jesus touched his heart when he looked right into it and said, I know why you're here. You're looking for a sign. You're looking for something that you can hold on to, so you say. And when that touched his heart, he said, this is somebody. This man is somebody. And when he said, I don't need to go and touch him. Your son lives, go. We're told that on the way up, he saw nothing. On the way back, he saw the birds. He saw the trees. He saw the great things. Completely different person. Now, how do we know he spent the night? Keep reading. Keep reading.
While he was still on the way, his servants met him with the news that his boy was living.
Okay.
When he inquired as to the time when his son got better, they said to him, the fever left him yesterday at the 11th hour.
It's always nice when the Bible comes in and helps me out. Yeah. Let's see. What time is the seventh hour?
Seventh hour, yeah. 7 in the morning,
isn't
it?
Nope.
It's midnight?
Nope.
7 hours usually at 1 o'clock in the morning.
1 o'clock.
6.
1 o'clock.
In the afternoon?
Afternoon. So, now, why didn't the servants come running? Right away.
Why didn't they?
Yes.
Well, it was good news, and he left in a very serious...
Yeah, I mean, but why didn't the servants leave at 1 o'clock in the afternoon to come and get him? Remember, it's 18 miles. So that, you know, you just don't just jump up and go. Why did the servants wait so long? Because they don't come to the next morning. No, they met somewhere along the way. Servants were on their way to him.
Did they stop and spend the night themselves?
Who's a nurse? Who's a hospital person?
Yeah, things were better, so.
Yeah, do you at first turn that here's somebody dying and then they look okay? Do you just jump up and say, man, they must be fine? Or do you wait a bunch of hours to see what happens? See? So. Yeah, the servants waited. They didn't know what was going on. They wasn't going to run and say, hey, he's doing better, and he'd get back there and he's dead. So they wait. So the nobleman comes, meets his servants. They give him the good news. His fever broke. He's well. Seems like he's doing great. What question then does the nobleman ask?
When did he start getting better?
as when he required as to the time that his son got better. They said to him, the fever left him yesterday at the seventh hour.
Okay. Now, in the Greek, the word left is very important because that means gone. For lack of a better word, that's a quick gone. In other words, the fever didn't go down. It was over. Why do you think 1 o'clock, the seventh hour, you know, why didn't John just say it was the exact time as Jesus said? Why is the seventh hour in there?
Well, to me that implies that the man had left that morning to get there.
Okay.
And that then he probably could have got home that night if he was...
That's certainly one reason. Why else the seventh hour? Why would this, 1 o'clock in the afternoon be important?
Well, in the Hebrews thinking, each number is significant about something.
Okay.
Seven is perfection.
That's stretching. That could be. What's a practical reason? If you have a fever at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, is it just going to go away if you're hot, sweltering in the desert?
Usually it comes higher in the afternoon.
Yeah, see, so I think that's why 1 o'clock is mentioned. This week. No accident, because just normal heat would have kept him warm. And so John's making a point there. So he says, what time did this happen? 1 o'clock in the afternoon. What does the nobleman say?
Well, their father realized that this was the exact time at which Jesus had said to him, your son will live.
Okay, and what's the results of this story? Next verse.
Pardon?
Next verse.
Oh, and so he and all his household believed.
Okay. This is the first time we see a household believing. The next time we see is in the book of Acts, where a whole household accepted Jesus. Why did the household believe?
They all knew about the...
Well, he didn't just accept it and go away. He had to teach his household. They had to learn from him.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly correct. Was he had a witness. How you doing, Terrence? He had a witness to give when he told them about Jesus. Do you see the contrast that happened in 2 days between a group of total unbelievers who despised Jews and Jews despised them? And there was something about Jesus that they saw, something about what he said, the way he was, the way he talked to them, that they invited him to the town meeting, and he probably could have stayed there for a long time. He stayed 2 days. He goes among his own people, and a lot of the Galileans, they believed in him, they saw who he was. Here comes a nobleman who's looking for a sign. But what did the religious leaders of the church of that kept saying to Jesus? If you're the Messiah, do what?
Show us some miracles.
Show us some miracles. And why didn't he? He'd be performing the greatest miracles of all, the Samaritan woman, the children at the temple, the kindness over and over. He had shown them the greatest miracles of all. But they kept wanting something for themselves. Even at the end, it was, I think, is it one of the kings said, give me a, I think it was somebody, give me a miracle and I'll believe. Everybody wants a miracle and I believe. God didn't answer those requests. But with a spark of faith, misguided, he did the nobleman. What does this mean to us today? Do you see where, as I looked into this, how we hear the story one way? Do you see the difference in the story now, tonight? I mean, it was a contrast. It was Christ working not to relieve somebody's pain. Christ working to save their soul. And as a result of that, the miracle came. But his concern was to get that man's attention. What do we learn about this in life today?
Well, as far as the Galilee is concerned, I could see the same, the parallel, I guess you'd call it, in a lot of people's theology today. I have this problem. Lord, if you'll take this problem away, I will do such and such and such for you. And you start bargaining with God about what is going to be instead of actually believing and turning it over to Him and saying, Thy will be done.
Okay, that's absolutely right. What other? How do we relate this story to us?
Well, I relate it to working with people in counseling sometimes. And truthfully, they're there because they're distressed. And if they're, if you try to do too much to quote relieve the situation, I really can't do that. But if there's almost too much relief, they may not stick in long enough to learn what they need to learn.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
And so sometimes you have to give them hope, but at the same time, they need to stay in that struggle until they really get what they need to get, or they're going to just be like that same situation, year, 2 years, 5 years, next marriage, whatever they're talking about. It's the same situation.
You know, I appreciate you saying that. Sometimes in sales training, I'll share what I call principles. And, you know, and I'll speak on it for, 5 minutes, and then they'll say, oh, well, I got it. And I'm thinking, it took me 4 months to really understand the depth of that and change it into my life. And here you've caught it in 5 minutes. Well, what's happened is they didn't catch it. They heard the words. It didn't change anything. They didn't understand the principles. So, what else in life? That's very good. What does this story do for us today?
God knows how to handle each one of us.
Absolutely.
Our psychological situation, our history, our emotions. He knows exactly where each one of us needs to get the job done.
Yeah.
And He will do that.
Yes.
We might not like it. It may not be our expectation, but He knows what it takes, and He has the ultimate goal in mind.
Yes.
And He is a loving God along the way, and you can't forget that even when it's not too present.
Mm-hmm. You know, but the quote I use quite often is, and I still ponder on it every once in a while, when we get to heaven and we see the end from the beginning, we see the whole thing, we wouldn't change a thing. Boy, sometimes that's hard, hard, hard to see. But we wouldn't change a thing. Then I look at this nobleman, just this little picture, of a few hours. What would you have changed in that scenario? See? But yet Jesus, reproved him and gave him some hard things to say. Seems kind of cruel. Please heal my son. Well, unless I do something miraculous, you ain't going to believe. I mean, that seems pretty tough, But see, the end was converted his whole household. So that's what we have to hang on to as we go through life with the ups and the downs we don't understand is, number one, God is in control. Number two, He's promised He'll take care of us. Maybe not in the ways we think, but He will. And when it's all said and done, if we trust Him, we look back and say, wouldn't have changed a thing.
Maybe Jesus didn't say it in that frame of mind. Maybe He said it with compassion. Maybe He said, because unless you see a miracle, you won't believe.
You know, and it could have been, His words might have been, but when you're sitting there begging for something, that ain't the answer you want. I don't care how you put it.
But He knew what He was thinking.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe it wasn't a reproval. Maybe it was, I know what you're thinking.
Maybe reproof is a harsh word, but He certainly was getting His attention.
Mm-hmm. Because He knew what He was thinking.
See, so it's it. Anybody else have any thoughts?
Is it, an example to us that, you know, of course you covered that, that Jesus is in control and he's concerned for us.
You know, the battle is quite often is we kind of like things to go our way, which is human nature. You know, I mean, from little kids is, you know, can we do this? No, well, why not? And that's kind of what we do with God. Well, you know, like I said, you know, I'm so impressed with Eloise's grandson wanting to be a missionary, and that's the last thing in the universe I'd want to do. Might end up a missionary. Is going to Big Ben and camping out, is that close? I don't know. Yeah, it might be. But God is in control, and He wants the best for us.
Well, and He wants us. I mean, you know, sometimes we're so narrow and short-sighted that we just want this removed or this experience.
Yes.
But He wants us to be with Him eternally.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm a 24-year-old man who's dealing with cancer. He's had it for about 8 years in his life. And, you know, my experience with him is sometimes I think, what can I offer this man? But then I realize, first off, it's just a matter of helping him to realize what can he do in his life. And then I said to him today when I saw him, I said, you know what? I don't think God has anything to do with your cancer. I don't think God's punishing you. I don't think God's... I said, but what are you going to learn? How are you going to live your life?
Yes, that's important. So, anybody else? Last time around. Father in heaven, thank you for caring and thank you for taking care of us. Sometimes we don't quite understand the path we're on, but we know one thing. You have a plan for our lives, and if we'll trust you, follow you, stay with you, we know that you have your arm around us and you keep saying, my child, let's just keep pressing forward. For this we're thankful. Help us not to look at signs and wonderments, but help us to look at you. In Jesus' name, amen.